Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, A.C. Felder. Today the topic is feminism with my special guest, Diana Newman. Let me tell you about Diana. Diana is Canadian. She earned an undergraduate degree from the University of Toronto, double major in psychology and sociology, mm-hmm. earned her master's degree in apologetics with a concentration in philosophy from Southern Evangelical Seminary, where right. we both attended.
Yes.
Travels nationally and internationally with team, speaks on different issues such as the New Age, abortion, knowability of history, Islam, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Welcome to the show, Diana.
Thank you.
So, team, what is team?
TEAM is the missions arm of Southern Evangelical Seminary. It stands for Truth, Evangelism, and Apologetics Mission. And it really provides a platform for students, faculty, and alumni of the seminary to teach on various levels. So sometimes we're on university campuses, sometimes we're in churches holding youth conferences, women's events, sometimes it could be youth groups. So the work looks very different, but the task is to defend Christian faith in the culture, however that looks.
Right, and I'm even part of TEAM.
You are a part of TEAM, and you need to become more a part of TEAM. I know you're busy though.
Well, I am going to make more room to do that.
Okay, good.
So let's get to the topic of today. Let's start off with defining our terms. I always like to define our terms.
Right.
You know, because people, you could be thinking one thing and they're thinking another thing.
Yeah.
So let's define our terms. What is feminism? We're talking about feminism. Mm-hmm. So what is feminism?
Well, it's good that you started that way, because depending on who you're speaking to, feminism is something that can be quite different. Very generally speaking, the most general definition perhaps that would be acceptable is feminism is a movement that's committed to this idea that men and women are equal and therefore deserve equal treatment. That's a very broad definition of feminism, and it's not one that any of us would have, well, most of us wouldn't have issues with this idea that women deserve equal value and treatment. That's a very broad definition. But there's also another type of feminism that is running throughout the culture, and it's the type of feminism that I like to look into a little bit further, because it's more nuanced than this original definition. The more nuanced feminism says that men and women are equally the same except for their anatomy, and that is something that deserves further attention.
So how in the world did you get interested in this topic?
For a number of reasons. I think the main reason would be my background is in sociology, so I'm just very naturally inclined to pay attention to what's happening in the culture. Some people like to people watch, which is fine, but I like to culture watch and society watch. And I do think that there are a lot of things that are happening in the culture today that are either directly or indirectly related to feminist ideology.
Okay. Now, I admit, when you define feminism, it wasn't what I thought feminism was.
Okay.
Which is why I loved on the show, because I learned so much new stuff,
right.
So much good stuff. But before we get to that, why do you think this topic is even important?
This topic is important. It's not just important for those of us who are in the church or those of us who are Christian. I think it's important for everyone, because females are everywhere. We're part of the human race.
Yeah, you're right? Everywhere.
We're everywhere. And then there are just certain ideas that are attached to what it means to be a woman, that if those ideas are skewed or off in any certain type of way, it's going to have an effect in the culture, because we exist in the culture. And so we need to be prepared not just to defend Christian faith, but we have to be prepared to attend to the ideologies and the mindsets and the philosophies that undergird what it means to be man and what it means to be woman. Because if we're off in those areas, then we will live in certain ways that manifest the skewness of our ideas.
Right. And I remember when you approached me with this topic, I was like, feminism? What does feminism have to do with apologetics? But you've convinced me.
good. I'm glad.
There's a connection.
There is. There's a connection between apologetics and any idea. Because ideas are the sorts of things that have to be defended, and if not defended, they will run rampant. So whether one is a Christian apologist or an apologist for women or apologist for any certain type of view, we have to be able to defend what we say we believe and what we articulate.
Right. Very good point. Very good point. Okay, so now, give us a brief history. You can take as much time.
Okay.
Give us a history of feminism, because I really want to understand where it all started and where are we now.
Right. So generally speaking, and quite specifically speaking, feminism is not an American idea. Feminism actually started in Europe. But I focus on feminism in America because it's the type of feminism that we're very closely related to, both ideologically and just geographically. Feminism in the States, it manifested in what they call waves. So you'll hear about the first wave of feminism, second wave. There's even a third wave of feminism. The first wave of feminism started in the early 19th century, and we can say that it went up all the way until 1920 when women got the right to vote. So this first wave of feminism, the feminists were very concerned about women being represented equally in the culture. So their concerns were quite specifically the right to enter into contract, the right to own property, and the right to vote. Very generally speaking, the first wave feminists were concerned with that because we can't deny that women have been systematically excluded. Even now, women are in different ways systematically excluded. So we don't deny that. That's something that's quite true. The first wave of feminists were concerned with giving women equal representation in those three areas. And that went all the way up until 1920, if you will. The dates, you know, are malleable.
Right.
Dates are kind of malleable when it comes to history, but very generally speaking, 1920 is the close of the first wave. Between 1920 and the end of the Second World War, there were other concerns going on in the culture that feminists really weren't vocal when the men were out to war and they were in the workforce, et cetera, et cetera. So the second wave of feminism emerged, roughly speaking, after World War II. So the second wave feminists and feminism is quite interesting because it's set in a context that was very different from the first wave of feminism. So if you consider what was happening in 1920 and the years beyond, we're right in the middle of the civil rights. The civil rights movement is to come, but we're right in the middle of the racial tensions that were happening. So not only were women systematically excluded from representation in the culture, black people were excluded as well. So those two things were happening together. Then in the 60s to the 80s, which the 80s would be the close of the second wave, from the 60s to the 80s, you saw the sexual revolution happening. The sexual revolution was only an effect of certain ideas that had been changing in the 20s and 30s. So we've heard of Margaret Mead in academia. She was a cultural anthropologist, and she was quite the feminist as well. So she really spearheaded this idea that mores and values were culturally relevant or relative. There were no absolute values. We had Margaret Sanger as well in the early 20th century, who was championing women's rights mainly in the cause of birth control and giving women the ability to control their fertility. That was all in the early 20th century, right when the second wave was gaining ground. In 1973, we had Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade separated the effects of the sexual act from the consequences of the sexual act. That was Roe v. Wade in 1973. That's when the second wave of feminism is coming to bear on the culture. And then in 70 would be the correct date, we had no-fault divorce was introduced, where the marital union could be terminated for no reason at all. That's what really no-fault divorce was. So right in the midst of the second wave feminism happening, you had all of these other things happening in the culture that feeds into feminist ideology, indirect ways, but in indirect ways too.
So you mentioned three waves, right?
Yes.
So what's the third wave?
The third wave of feminism, it's in-house squabbles, if you will. So the third wave feminists critique the second wave feminists for not recognizing and acknowledging the distinctions and the experiential differences between women across the board. So the experience of a Black woman in America is quite different from a white woman in America, and the third wave feminists wanted that to be recognized. The experience of a woman in a third world country is much different than the experience of a woman in a first world country, so we have to have a type of feminism that addresses that. So the third wave critiques the second wave, if I might say, for their short-sightedness on the different experiences that women have.
Okay, now I'm trying to think this through. Okay, so the third wave, I'm trying to think this through.
Okay.
So are we saying then that women in different societies are looked at differently? I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, so for instance, in the United States, you have women who lead corporations.
Yes.
Whereas maybe in a third world country where they just care for the kids.
Okay, yep.
So are feminists okay with women just caring for the kids in the third world country? Are they saying that those women should be liberated too and should be able to stand beside their husbands and or their whatever in the field and do whatever he's doing?
Yeah, feminists, very generally speaking, have a broad idea, and I think it's a right idea, that females everywhere, doesn't matter where you are located in the world, deserve equal treatment. But what that looks like may be different depending on your culture. So in some Eastern countries where you have certain religious ideas that say that to be a woman is to be a punishment in certain caste systems, depending on how you come back, it's an effect of something that you did in a previous life. So in certain Eastern religions, their spiritual ideas dictate that being a woman in and of itself is something that is less than, right? So in karmic religions, depending on your karma, you may come back as a cockroach or you may come back as a prince. It depends on your karma.
Or you may come back as a woman.
Or you may come back as a woman. So in those cultures, what equality looks like is different than in a culture that affirms that both are human. In certain countries in the world, women are second-class citizens. In a certain country in particular, women are not able to drive. It's illegal to drive. So what feminism looks like, say, in Islam, and there even is right now, there is a growing movement of females and men as well who are interested in liberating women within the confines of Islam. So it's going to look very different. Very generally speaking, there's this common idea that equality is deserved by women everywhere.
Okay. Now, I don't do this very often.
Sure.
But I'm going to do it now.
It's your show.
I'm going to admit that I am ignorant about something.
We all are.
I am so ignorant about feminism. And let me tell you, my idea of feminism was just this angry woman.
Yeah.
I just have a picture of this angry woman, you know, saying, don't open the door for me. I can open up my own door.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, I don't even know where I got that idea from.
Well, I think that you got that idea because it's accurate, right?
Okay, well, I guess maybe.
So you're fine. There's a strand, I guess I can say, there's a stream, a group of women who take this idea so far, the idea that men and women are equal except for anatomy, take it so far as to say that men need not do anything at all for women. And if you do, then you are devaluing me. So it becomes an issue for you to open my door for me because I can do it myself. It becomes an issue for you to be chivalrous to me because you don't need to do that according to this brand of feminism. Now, it's not something that is monolithic. It's only pertaining to a certain group. But the reason why you have that idea is because it's quite real. I think we hear that in the culture in different ways. Women tend to say things like they don't need a man for anything. And the effect of that is that men don't think that they're needed for anything. So that's quite real.
Yeah, and I think it can also, you know, like you say, have a negative impact on men, because now men are wondering, well, now we've got women doing all these different things. They're moving and they're having taking on different roles, and I don't even know where I fit in the home anymore.
Mm.
So then sometimes, you know, it can affect a man's viewpoint of himself, because now he's confused about who he is,
right,
because women are changing who they are from his perspective.
Right. See, this is the indirect result of feminist ideology. That's the indirect result of this second wave feminist ideology, is that men no longer are clear about what it means to be a man.
Right.
That's an indirect effect of it. So whether we're talking about the chivalry or whether we're talking about their role in the family, you know, if you keep telling men, very generally speaking, if you keep telling them that they're not needed for anything, then they'll start acting like it.
Right.
That's an indirect result of feminist ideology. So when you consider a pendulum on a clock, it swings back and forth. The first wave of feminists, they were necessary because they had to restore the swing to the pendulum. But the second wave took it too far, and now the pendulum is just going crazy. The point of feminism, that's not an academic term, but I'll say it when it's going crazy. The point of feminism is to restore value and equality. It's not to esteem women over men, because that's just as ineffective as esteeming men over women.
And this leads to my next question, and you're actually touching on it. It's some of the positive things about feminism.
Some of the positive things about feminism would have to do with some of the things that I've said already. Oppression happens. That's just a human. It's not, Christianity is not the thing that oppresses women. You really don't need Christianity to be oppressive. It just seems to be the case that humans are going to find a way to oppress another group of humans, whether that's racially, economically, whether that's by your sex. Humans do that all the time. So any movement that arises that addresses that is a necessary movement. Now, sometimes movements go way too far, and we've seen that in different contexts, but the movement itself is necessary to correct a right. So we ought not to say that feminists, feminism, if we grant the first definition that I gave, we ought not to say that Christianity is in opposition to feminism, because if feminism is concerned with this idea that men and women are equal, which is a quite biblical idea, then we should all be committed to that. But we shouldn't be committed to taking it so far that we eradicate the clear differences between the sexes.
And that actually was leading right into my next question. Is feminism and the Bible compatible? And I guess that depends on what you mean by feminism.
It depends, and that's why I like how you opened up the show. It depends on what you mean by feminism. You have to define it for me, right? So if we grant the first definition, we all ought to be feminists. Now, I'm not saying that Christians have treated women justly all the time. That's not what I'm saying, because that's clearly not true. What I'm saying, that Christianity itself affirms this idea that men and women are equal. And anytime you find a professing Christian denying that, then there's something wrong with that professing Christian, not with Christianity.
Right. So how would you respond to someone who says that, well, in the Bible, we see a devaluation of women. We see in the New Testament, we see where Paul tells women to just shut up in church.
Mm-hmm.
We see where, you know, women, the testimony of women were not equal to the testimony of men, or that women could, a guy could have more than one wife, which seems to devalue a woman. So how would you respond to someone that says that the Bible actually devalues women?
So I'll say this, not everything that you see in the Bible is a prescription. So there's just certain things that the Bible contains. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the Bible is located in a certain historical context. So it emerged in a context where women were not considered, the testimony of a woman was not considered authoritative. That doesn't then mean that the Bible affirms and teaches that the women's testimony should not be authoritative. It's just a cultural connection. But I can even go a little bit further. I was at an event a couple of weeks ago, and speaking with a young man, and he made the claim that the Old Testament was oppressive to women because of the Jacob and Leah and Rachel story. Jacob had to work 7 years, and apparently working 7 years is oppressive to women. It's just like treating women as animals. So I thought that was funny because I don't know who works 7 years for a cow. Right. That's the first thing. But I think the other thing that was quite interesting is, and this is perhaps an indirect result of feminism, we have compromised the value of what it means to be a woman. So in every other area of life, the time and the commitment that you give to something is an indication of the value that you put on that thing. Right, the more time right. you give to something, it's you're giving that time because you have more value.
Right.
So it's quite interesting that the fact that Jacob has to work
right.
is considered right. oppressive. Right. Right. What does that say about the value of what it means to be a woman? I think we live in a culture, and this is another indirect effect. We live in a culture where women are not treated as objects to be earned. And I don't say that in a material way or as if it's not in a property type way. Mm-hmm. But there's something to be said about if you want a woman, you just don't get her by asking. She's more valuable
right.
than that. You have to come with something. This is where the bride price comes in Israel, right? So we don't practice the bride price now, but the bride price was the type of system where you had a nuclear family where a man was responsible for protecting his wife and his kids. And if someone wanted to come in and marry a young woman, you couldn't just have her because you asked. You had to come with something.
Right.
And you had to get approval from the father. And if you didn't measure up, you couldn't have the daughter because she's more valuable than what you think, right? So we've lost that. We've lost that. Now people are just getting together because you think I'm cute.
Right.
And that devalues women.
That's a very good way of putting it. I never even thought about it that way.
Yeah.
So what are your view on gender roles?
Gender roles, so there's a distinction to be made between gender roles and sex. Gender and sex, that's the age-old question, gender and sex. Gender is fluid. Gender are the roles that we ascribe to the different sexes. Gender doesn't have any referent on its own. It's just a label that we attach because we get this impression that there are two different sexes, men and women. If there were not two different sexes, there would be no gender roles.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. Now, gender is fluid, but sex is not fluid. I am ordered to be a woman. I've got double X chromosomes in every cell of my body. You are ordered to be a man. You've got XY chromosomes in every cell of your body.
Right?
So sexuality is not so fluid. One can act in ways that they think are appropriate for the opposite gender, but your acting in that way does not change your sex.
Right.
Your brain is ordered based on your chromosomal content. And it's not a matter of feeling, right? It's not a matter of feeling. So gender roles look quite different in any given culture. It depends on what the culture assigns to that. But gender roles ought not to be dissolved so that it doesn't reinforce this very clear idea that there are differences between the sexes.
Right.
So the gender roles can change, that's fine, but we ought not to, like I said, we ought not to say that because gender roles change, sex is fluid as well. That's not right.
So going to this idea that you mentioned before where we're the same, or feminism, the idea of feminism or segments of feminism, that we are the same minus genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
Dispel that. How do we know that's not true?
For a number of different reasons. You have a wife, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you know that your wife is very different from you, and it has something more to do with her anatomy. She thinks differently than you. She processes differently than you. She probably assesses differently than you. She has different strengths than you have. So it just seems to be intuitively clear that there are differences between the sexes. You hear it all the time. Men say they don't understand women.
Right.
You won't hear a man say, I don't understand men.
Right.
Because they're a man.
Right.
Right? So this idea that there are not differences between the sexes that are intuitive, I think is not to honor our reason and our intellect. Clearly there are differences. There wouldn't even be gender if we didn't know that there were sex differences.
Yeah, I mean, even physiologically, I mean, like in the brain works different for a man and a woman.
Absolutely. The brain works differently. The testosterone that floods the brain of a baby in early gestation, it does something to how that fetus then develops. The dense network of fibers, the corpus callosum in men and women, it's the dense network that separates the left and the right brain. That looks very different in men and women. Men have less connections between the left brain and the right brain, which is why, very generally speaking, men are terrible at multitasking. Can't do many things. That's your brain, right? Your brain, that's the reason for it. That's not to say that men are not able to multitask.
Right.
We're just saying that the makeup of the brain is such that, generally speaking, when you consider a bell curve, that the networks between the left and the right brain in a woman are more densely connected, making women excellent multitaskers and able to do many things at the very same time. It's not just anatomy, there are clear differences. The cells in our eyes, they have their different cells. Men, the cells in a man are ordered to detect certain things in ways that the same thing is not present in the cells, the retinal cells of a woman. So there are a lot of really interesting biological differences between the sexes that can't be explained by nurture.
Last question, is feminism dangerous?
The second, the ideology and the philosophy of the second wave, I think, is very dangerous. My pendulum analogy, whenever you take the pendulum way too far, you're going to upset the homeostatic balance, right? So we're out of balance in the culture today because men don't know where they fit.
Right.
And women don't know their value, very generally speaking. We're out of balance. So is feminism necessary? Yes. But it's the type of feminism that recognizes that God made the sexes very different, that when you exploit those differences, you end up in oppression and exploitation. But when you promote the differences in a very complementary way, you get a really well-functioning society.
That would be the perfect note to end the show on.
Good.
I want to thank you very much, Diana Newman, speaking with me on feminism. And that will end this show. To join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.
You can find out more about Giving an Answer, as well as listen to other episodes, by visiting us online at www.givinganswer.org. For the open lines in your